All right, hello and welcome to another edition of Medical Minds Conversations with Guthrie Experts. It's our opportunity as a former journalist and a current family medicine physician to bring you up to date on some of the things you may not know about, or maybe you do, but you'd like some more information, anything we can do to help you live a little bit healthier lifestyle. So my name is Steve Osterhaus. Joining me as always is Dr. Corinne Johnston, who is a family medicine physician, as well as the chief patient experience officer for the Guthrie Clinic Health System. Dr. Johnston, hey, how are you?
Steve, I'm doing well. How are you? Did you make it through the holidays?
I did make it through the holidays, busy as always, a lot of time with family and friends. How about you?
Yeah, same here. I saw a funny meme on one of the social media about, a stick figure, and he's festive until Christmas with a Santa hat. And then for about a week, he's confused. He's full of food and confused about what day it is. And then after the new year, he's just overweight. And I think that might fit with all of us.
Somehow they got a photo of me and made it into a stick figure. That is definitely how I feel.
Exactly. Did you make it up to the new year this year?
Yeah, made it up to the new year. Not celebrating like I used to back in my younger years, but yes, definitely made it to the new year and spent time with the immediate family in the house. Didn't go out, but definitely made it till midnight. But that's about it.
It is. My how things have changed, right? I can remember in my 20s going out and having a great time, and now I'm 40, and if I make it to midnight with a couple good friends and I can wake up the next morning feeling okay, then it's a good time.
Yeah, that's all it takes, right? Now in our not old, but our later stage in life.
Yes, exactly. So speaking of that, kind of rolling into our word of the day for this episode, some of us may have experienced times in our early 20s where we perhaps have too much holiday cheer, and we feel like the room is spinning, that we're sitting in the spins, as we constantly hear. There is a word that we use called vertigo in healthcare. Are you familiar with that?
A little bit. I have had family members speak about their diagnosis of vertigo, specifically a relative who no longer goes on roller coasters because that really triggers their vertigo. And, I'm of an age where I'm not really going on roller coasters anyway as much anymore because my stomach can't handle it like it used to. But yes, in this case, they referenced vertigo. Fortunately, yeah. I haven't had to deal with that issue. But yeah, they talk about it when going on roller coasters and how they just can't deal with it anymore and a lack of balance.
Yeah, so it is. Vertigo is simply that feeling of the room spinning or the room tilting. So very commonly in my practice, right, in primary care, I have a patient come in and their chief concern might be dizziness. And the first question we're going to ask them is, do you feel like the room's spinning or do you feel like you are off balance? Because that kind of changes in our mind what we're thinking about could be a cause and what may be the workup and then treatment.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because I probably wouldn't think there's a differentiation there. But clearly, when you put it that way, yeah, there is. There can be a difference between a room spinning and just feeling a little bit off balance.
Yeah. Yep. Probably the easiest question we ask in that workup and the easiest thing we can get an answer to. But excited today to talk to our guest and really talk about what things can we do for these patients, because it's something that very likely you'll be afflicted with, some dizziness or some vertigo sometime in your life. And what are some things you can do to help?
Okay, well, joining us now is our guest, Dr. Jose Traverso, and a doctor of physical therapy. And Dr. Traverso, thanks so much for being here, because you're going to be just an incredible expert on what we're talking about today.
Thank you for having me. I much appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity to be in this show, heard by tens of millions of people across the world. So great.
Jose, we much appreciate your optimism this morning as we're all meeting. We're going to, to start off the show today, Steve and I talked a little bit about, very, very little bit about the word of the day, which was vertigo. So talking about the room spinning, and I was sharing with Steve that as a primary care doctor, one of those concerns that we always shudder to hear is dizziness. Oh, dizziness. Will we find an answer? What will we do? So this is something you're well versed in. We wanted to, you know, kind of give you the floor to talk a little bit about what it is you do as a physical therapist who does look at vestibular disorders.
This is good, and I thank you, because one of the first things that we ask patients is, would you please do me a favor and describe dizziness without using the word dizziness? And that opens the world to, I'm feeling wonky. I am learning English with these funky words at times, because they are nowhere, but they are very common. Wonky seems to be one of them. So depending from my PT perspective, depending, research shows that too, of what the patient describes their symptoms like, then we are thinking one direction or the other. I'll give you an example. I would like to start thinking, or for everybody to think, that the vestibular organs, the one that we have inside the ears, imagine that they are the reins that control a horse, okay? So we are walking around and we are keeping our heads straight, and both our inner ears have two reins, left and right. So what happens if I have a lesion on the right rein, on the right vestibular organ? The horse pulls to the left of the way, and that's where the spinning starts. So when a patient tells me I have a spinning vertigo or rotational vertigo, it's already suggesting that most of the times we have a unilateral lesion that has to do usually with the inner ear. Whereas when the horse, we have no reins, say we have a stroke, or we have a vestibular hypofunction, or we have a bilateral vestibular infection, a vestibulitis, then we go like this. And we suffer something called oscillopsia. Oscillopsia meaning the horizon is moving around. Most of my patients describe dizziness as, I'm lightheaded. And when they tell me lightheaded, the first thing is, how much marijuana you smoke and are you drunk? And if the answer is no and no, then I have to think maybe high blood pressure, cardiopulmonary etiology has to do with this. After all, medical dizziness, let's put it that way, counts for about 25% of the entire dizziness that goes around. We'll talk about that later. So words are important, and dizziness, depending on the description of the patient, is leading us to think it could be systemic, I am feeling lightheaded, or do I have a unilateral vestibular lesion, I am spinning, and the most important, the associated symptoms. One thing is I am dizzy and I'm spinning a little bit, and a different thing is I'm spinning, I'm dizzy, but my mouth is going down, I don't feel my arm. Go to the ER. So the juice over here is in the details. It's in the clinical exam and it's in the interview. And that is something that, thankfully, in Guthrie, I had to say that in Guthrie, I had the opportunity to spend at least an hour with the patient, reviewing past medical history, but allowing the patient to tell me what's going on. Sometimes it's the go. You're dizzy. You have vertigo. Okay, moving on. I want to know why, but I want to know your description, what you feel. That gives us a lot of information about it. Make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, it does. You know, this might be too basic, but so I have a relative who, for instance, doesn't go on roller coasters anymore. Now, he's of middle age like I am, so we're not really going on roller coasters much anymore anyway. But he says it really upsets his vertigo. So is that something that's a possibility?
That is interesting. The difficulty, the inability or difficulty to control balance is motivated by a variety of things, not just being middle-aged. And I thought you were only 25, but if you're over 25, which you're not, then there are a couple problems that happen usually through the aging process. The little sensors inside the inner ears become a little more hypofunctioning. We take more medication. We have a lot of polypharmacy going on. Our senses are not as sharp as they used to be. And there are people who are chronically inclined not to being able to take rotational forces because they have an intolerance to that. There are studies that point out that some of those patients have a genetic predisposition to do that. If mama had it, I have it. But most of the times, there's not very strong research behind that. And I think it has to do more with the statistics. And I think that you both might be in agreement with this. Most of the studies to determine questions like that that are very pertinent, they have to do on the classification of disease, on the ICD-10 codes. So when they do a study of how many people and why people, when they get into a roller coaster, they have a problem, they need to get a section of the population with that diagnosis. So giving a patient an ICD-10 code is tough because it's not the easiest thing to do, and it's not the sharpest instrument. So most of the statistical studies seem to be a little bit flawed. So for your buddy, for who was it that cannot get in the roller coaster? It was your aunt?
Relative. No. Yeah. Yeah, an in-law relative.
Oh, don't say their name then. It's an in-law.
No. We don't want to.
We're just going to keep it at that.
People with that chronic intolerance, there are some work that we can do, but usually most of the times we are dealing with something called vestibular hypofunction, when the inner ears are having a very hard time communicating with the brain and sending the information that is required at the speed that is required and at the efficacy. Sometimes one works more than the other, or both are hypo. They are not sending enough info. The same thing that happens when you take 3 martinis and a gin and tonic. You become drunk, but you become drunk also because your inner ears go down, your brain goes down, and you are. That is hypofunction of your central nervous system and your inner ear.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, Jose, you said that, you know, when you, your history, like the amount of time that you can spend with the patient, what they can tell you, whether there's symptoms, because I think we think in our layperson, we think, well, doc will just look in my ear and they can tell if something's wrong, but we can't really see that, right? You have to do different types of tests.
You're right. Yeah, right. That's why you went to school and you do the right thing like you do. And you don't check Facebook and you say, hold on a second, let me check Facebook. Oh yeah, this is the last post. It's a long process. Healthcare, I love being a therapist. This is all I can do in my life and I enjoy being who I am. But it takes, patients usually don't realize of how much we all, you, me, the next one, we all, how much time we spend reading about past medical histories, how much time it takes to examine, to read, to listen, to put 2 and 2 together. And yeah, it's not a matter of, let me look at the ear. No, that's not the case. It's like many people come see me and say, I want a quick solution for my dizziness. Yeah. I just want it now. And not so easy. It's not always like that. But
yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier the different types of dizziness and the different percentages. Can you go a little bit more into that and the types of dizziness that people can experience?
Yes, indeed. So, there is dizziness is very important. It's very invalidated for about 15% of the population. That's usually the incidence of these diseases. But if we classificate dizziness and the etiology, why it happens, in a large swath of things, the 40% or so of those symptoms are coming for the inner ear. And when I say the inner ear, we speak of the vestibular organ. Inside, we do, as you know, we do have an organ that is called the labyrinth, and the labyrinth is divided in two. We have the cochlea that allows us to hear, and we have the vestibulum that gives us balance. So 40% of the times, people have problems on dizziness because of the inner ear being affected by a variety of things. The most common of all is benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, that I can go into that. But it's the most common, especially on women, especially over 65 years old, usually on the right side, usually affecting the right posterior canal. Then about 10% or so could be addressed to the central nervous system. Central nervous system could give you dizziness for a variety of reasons, from Parkinson to MS, but the big 600-pound gorilla, I would say for a neurologist, is vestibular migraines. Vestibular migraines are also, I mean, ladies are so lucky. Ladies also have more vestibular migraines than anybody else, and they are usually well dealt by neurologists. Then there is another 25% or so of dizziness that can be brought from medical problems, from systemic dizziness that we call it. Say, for example, your cardiopulmonary system gets out of whack, your blood pressure goes up and down, or your diabetes crashes, or there is a hormonal issue, or your electrolytes are going up and down, your sodium, your potassium. So the most common over there is definitely cardiopulmonary, for what I see and for what I read. And that is very well managed by physicians like you, who take care of their patients and make sure that those levels, those blood pressures, those electrolytes, they are where they are supposed to be. And then, and this is a, I mean, it's not a shame, but it's a reality. About 25% of all the cases, apparently they are unknown. We have no idea why you're dizzy, lady. Sometimes they're psychogenic, sometimes they are, oh my God, but it is interesting to me that even the Barani Society, which is the international society that takes care of dizziness and headaches, they admit that 25%, one out of four, we have no idea why you're dizzy. So we treat people symptomatically. Physicians take care of them in one direction. Physical therapists try to do it in another way. But it is fascinating in my point of view that in 2024, almost 2025, one out of four patients, it is tough to understand why. And my particular take is that these folks are usually very complex cases. I wish that I had patients that only have one problem and say, oh yeah, this is your problem, let me fix it. Human beings are complex. So most of these patients, I suspect, they have a combination of vestibular lesion with a systemic problem that also have a little bit of anxiety, PTSD, high blood pressure, smoking, deconditioning, obesity. So all gets together. And it's very difficult to pinpoint this is the problem because after all, go back to the ICD-10 codes. They all want a code. So why am I dizzy? I don't know. It could be posterior canal. It could be diabetes. So I think that is the case. That 25% of cases, it's a complex case. It's a collection of many things happening.
And it's hard with those, right? Because you mentioned we, society now, I think part of what leads to the polypharmacy is fix me now, right? Correct. I don't want to make a lifestyle change. I want you to give me a medicine to make it better. So there are few medicines that we really can prescribe folks to try to help with dizziness or vertigo.
Correct. Now, the most, as you know well, the most prescribed medication for dizziness is meclizine. Yeah. I mean, Antivert is given away at the ED, family, internal medicine, sport medicine, neurology, everybody uses that. And funny, as you mentioned, my previous patient before this, she was a patient who had, I mean, this, I'm not making that, it's kind of funny, 2 years with dizziness, with a spinning vertigo, and she has been taking meclizine for the last 2 years.
Wow.
So what happens with that? Meclizine is a fantastic medication that I want you to prescribe me so I can go home, take it easy, and then seek care, and then get the diagnosis and treatment. But it's not a long-term medication, and everybody agrees with that. So managing dizziness symptomatically with meclizine exclusively, it's kind of not going anywhere. It's like I tell my patients, taking meclizine for 3 years is like throwing a wet blanket on an angry cat. You know, the cat is going to be like that. But when you lift the blanket, like, wow, it's still there.
Yeah.
There. So we are not about throwing wet blankets. We are about to understand why the cat is so angry. So meclizine, short term, I'm great with that. With patients like this that I saw, I had to tell her, just come see me. Come see me next week when I have a moment. It has a half-life of 6 hours or so, and it's going to be in your system for about a day or so. So if I had to ask something of physicians, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, from anybody who's going to send us a patient, please ask the patient, if all possible, try not to take meclizine 24 or 48 hours before you're going to see your therapist. Because having meclizine on board 3 times a day, it depresses your nerve system. It brings your vestibular organs so low that my exam is going to be very inspecific. It's tough. So I would say that meclizine short term. And definitely avoid it 24 to 48 hours before you come see me.
So without that medicine, which totally makes sense, right? It's like if I have a cold, sure, I can take something over the counter that's going to make me think I'm feeling a little bit better for the next few hours, but it's not solving the problem. So what are some of the ways we can solve that problem specifically with rehabilitation? Where do we go from there without the medicine?
Lovely. So let's make two big I mean, you can see my hands here. If I go here, you won't see them. So there are two different groups over here. I'm going to be very broad at this, and I'm going to call BPPV over here in the BPPV army, and then everybody else. And everybody else benefits very well, including BPPV, but everybody else, of something called vestibular rehabilitation, which is a little bit of a misnomer, and I will explain why. So there are things that physical therapists can do, definitely. The most effective, the quickest, and what patients want, fix me in one, is the treatment for benign paroxysmal positional vertigo. That is, for the people who are listening to us, benign BPPV for short, what a mouthful. It's what happens when small little particles that we have inside our ear, they're called otoliths, and they're made of bone, of calcium carbonate, after all. They degrade either because of trauma or because patients are getting older and those little otoliths degrade. They fall into one of the three canals that we have in each ear. And when that happens, it triggers a little sensor that we have inside our canal called the crista ampullaris. So when that happens, this is the part that I love the most. The brain is going to receive a funky information from your ear that says, hey, Bob, you're turning your head to the left. But my eyes are saying, no, you're not. And my neck is saying, no, you're not. So when there is a conflict of information between your inner ear, your eyes, and what you feel, vertigo ensues. And if it's unilateral, we spin the horse rein. And if it's bilateral, whoa, we lose it around, oscillopsia. So what can we do for people with BPPV? There are techniques called canalith repositioning techniques, or CRT for short. The father of all this was Dr. Epley, who was an otosurgeon back in the 1980s in the West Coast. And he gave, I mean, like many other surgeons, he gave this particular maneuver after his name, Dr. Epley. And the Epley maneuver is very effective, about 80% in the best in the first shot, and about more than 90% in the second and third shot. But it's very effective only for the posterior canal. Remember, I said we have three canals. So when we test the patient in clinic and we do something called a Dix-Hallpike test, the Dix-Hallpike test is going to tell us if we have loose fragments lodged into one of those canals. But there are two more canals. The most common is the posterior, the not so common, the horizontal, and the very uncommon, but not impossible, the anterior canal. So what can we do? CRT, the most common maneuver, the most that we all use, is called the Epley maneuver. And the Epley maneuver tries to relocate those little particles by rolling your head back where they belong in a section of your vestibulum called the utriculum. So the Epley maneuver does that very well, but it's not the only maneuver. That's the thing. When I read clinical histories and say Dix was negative, I did an Epley and the symptoms continue, that does not mean necessarily that we don't have BPPV. That means simply that you haven't tested the other two canals, or you haven't addressed the other two canals. Explain myself. And that is what we do with people with the people with BPPV. CRT are very effective for those. Keep in mind that BPPV is not going to affect your cochlea. You're not going to lose hearing. You're not going to have tinnitus. And you're only going to have dizziness when you move your head. If you don't move your head, your inner ears are not moving. Therefore, in cases of BPPV, patients only have dizziness when they move their head. Mm-hmm. If they're perfectly fine, they're fine, which is completely different from the other section. There are many other reasons why we can have dizziness. And for those folks, we use something called vestibular rehabilitation. Vestibular rehabilitation is mostly based on gaining something called gaze stability. So gaze stability is what I'm doing by looking into your eyes. I'm looking at your eyes and I'm moving my head, but my eyes stay on yours. And that happens because there is a reflex called the vestibular ocular reflex that is pretty quick. And because that reflex is present, my eyes are on yours. But if that reflex is gone, say my diabetes, my A1C is in double digits, or I have a neuro problem, or I have issues in the base of my brain, that reflex is not present, or is very low. So when I turn my head, my eyes go with it. And that creates a poor fixation on target. And when that happens, whoa, people get dizzy. So we train patients to have dizziness, eyes on target. We have patients and we train them on balance. So balance, loaded and unloaded, and then habituation and gaze fixation are the basis of something called vestibular rehabilitation, which again is a misnomer because we are not just rehabilitating the vestibular organ, but the relationship between the vestibulum, the eyes, to the brain, and the proprioceptive system, how people feel their joints, their feet, their necks, all those things. So those are the two things that we do for patients. Either we fix you quickly, if you have VPPV, very quickly, or we do vestibular rehabilitation to regain your ability to keep eyes on target.
And that's so important, right? Jose, I have a patient who actually has experienced this within the system with your team. And, you know, it took months, but he would say, you know I just need to keep my head a little bit this way and keep my eyes this way. And I don't experience that dizziness. And for him, and for me as his doctor, he's older. He has a lot of things we would call fall risks, right? So as we age, there's those concerns. So this plays so nicely into preventing those falls and possible fractures down the line.
Correct. You are absolutely correct. We have several patients, especially the elderly population, and those with significant comorbidities who are at fall risk. Fall risk is a hot topic today in healthcare. And our work as physical therapists is sometimes possible. And I have to say, sometimes it's kind of, I wouldn't call it impossible, but very challenging. There are situations that are going to challenge your balance that are irreversible. Say, decompensated diabetes for quite a bit. Your vestibular organs that go, the nerve, the cochlear vestibular nerve that goes between your ear and your brain becomes hypofunctioning chronically. And it's kind of tough to bring it back. Many authors talk of irreversible damage to that particular nerve. Lots of peripheral neuropathy, that peripheral neuropathy that affects the proprioception of people at the bottom of their feet. So if people cannot feel their feet and they're walking on cork, they become very unstable. That is something that even though we try to improve their balance, their proprioception, their gaze fixation, there are things that medically are very tough to heal from in your office, in my office, and everybody's office. And you said very well before, abandon your toxic habits. That is very important. I think that I pray on that please stop doing what you're doing. Smoking 2 packs a day is not a good thing for you. At some point, it's going to catch up with you. Mm-hmm. And when things like this catch up with you, kind of tough to go back to it. So, yeah, fall risk, very important.
Yeah. What I found really interesting, well, I found this all very interesting, but as the non-clinical person in this group, the play between the two of you, right? In primary care and physical therapy. And you've touched on it, but if you could talk a little bit more about that, really either of you, about how important it is for the two of you and your different offices and practices to work together. Because I wouldn't have thought vertigo, I'm going to go get physical therapy. You know, I wouldn't think that, but it's obviously the way to go.
Correct. Well, it is interesting. It's a great question. And I think there is always in Guthrie, in any healthcare industry, there is always room for improvement. And I think we're going in the right direction. The best way right now that I see to manage my patients is to have a great relationship with this lovely lady in front of me, because it's the direct communication, the messaging, the keeping in contact, the, hey, this is what's going on, tell me. That is invaluable. And that is what really helps people. That you and I can continue to communicate and share information. The better that we all communicate as team members, the better the patients are going to get out, the better results we're going to get. That is so important. And I am blessed that I work with people like you, people like many other physicians around here, who we can share ideas together and we can share findings together. And that's how patients get better.
And I think you very, very over adequately in a great way explained that physical therapy is more than just an exercise. So I don't know, Steve, your perception running in, a lot of times we run into that, you know, whether it's your knee, your dizziness, your overactive bladder, right? Incontinence in women, they think that, well, I can do those at home. You know, very commonly, I want to send you to physical therapy for your overactive bladder or for your incontinence. Well, I know how to do Kegels. Well, that's great, but there's so much more to it. And I think Jose has shed just a small amount of light on the amount of education that our physical therapists go through and continue to educate themselves in order to best serve the population and do more than just stretches that I can do at home. You know, and if it avoids a pill, it's wonderful, right? Let's fix this without surgery and without a pill. Or in some cases, this is the fix, right? We don't have other options.
Correct. And I thank you for that. You explain it very, very clearly. We are more than that. And this is where I started. This is an evolution of the profession. We started, the American Physical Therapy Association was founded in the 20s, 1921 or so. But physical therapy, as physical therapists, we have been doing the promotion, the improvement of function on patients since before the Greeks. I mean, it's difficult to separate the use of physical means to the use of to the people who are healing patients, whether they were physicians, therapists, nurses, whatever it was. But our profession has experienced a significant improvement through the years. In the last 10, 15 years, we have come from bachelor's degree that was 20 years ago to a doctoral degree of 7 years today. We have about 426 residencies. We have 43 fellowships. I'm a fellow of manual therapy. That gives us the ability to improve, whether it's a two-year program or a three-year program, in a discipline that you feel that you want to improve. We have 11 specialties right now. The most recent is hand therapy. Many over here in Robert Packer Hospital, we have a joke around that is difficult to tell apart a physical therapist from an occupational therapist. And we are two very different people, but it's tough. It's tough to understand that some people say, yeah, send it to PT/OT or PDOD. Well, we don't do PDOD. One thing is our physical therapist, one thing is our occupational therapist, and trying to educate everyone and trying to bring up who we are and what we can do for your patients, because your patients are my patients. We all want the best for them. That's all it is. So I completely agree with you, 100%, of course.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Traverso, I have learned a ton. And I think I speak for Dr. Johnson. Can't thank you enough for your time today. I have been enlightened myself. And it's been a great experience. And I really think that our listeners and viewers learned a lot today. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you both. This is great. Call me anytime. I'll be more than happy.
Careful what you wish for.
So for that closing piece, Steve, in my family, we call it Jeopardy, the Jeopardy question. So if we were going to be on Jeopardy, it's, you know, you're going to win, you're going to go forward. If the question on Jeopardy was, where is your center of balance? What would the answer be?
So if we call the center of balance, I would have to get standing. I would have to get it here in the center of my belly. It would be between in the center of base of support. My center of balance is my wife. That is my center of balance. You see, in case she's listening to me, she is the center of my balance. And my mother-in-law, of course.
And not sure if you won Final Jeopardy, but you definitely won life there. You won in the game of life.
You know what? 26 years of marriage gives you that, buddy.
Yeah. Good at that.
Okay. Great conversation. And to answer that Final Jeopardy question, I think I'm going to be the big winner here, Dr. Johnson. I'm going to go with inner ear. Is that the answer?
I think that's good, Steve. I would agree. I would agree with that. I think we're there.
Excellent. And I also think he's going to get, at least I think, maybe we won't tell our other guests, but he's going to be our favorite guest so far because he complimented both of us on multiple occasions.
Yeah.
So I really felt good coming away from this.
Yeah. You know, that might have to be an expectation for all further guests on our podcast.
Yes. Yes. We'll put it right in the guidelines in fine print.
It sounds good, Steve.
All right. If you want any more information, whether it's on vestibular rehabilitation, vertigo, or any of the other previous topics we've mentioned, or any other tidbits that might help you live a healthier lifestyle, we encourage you to visit Guthrie.org/engage. That's our Guthrie Engage program, because we want you to play an active role in your own life and really living a healthier lifestyle. So have a great day, everyone. And Dr. Johnston, we'll do it again next time.
Great, Steve. We'll see you then.